You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. My name is Drew. Joining me as always, the Mount Rushmore to my Vietnam War Memorial, my dear friend Andy.
Hey, what's up, man?
Not too much, Andy. How's things going with you?
Well, I've been smoking a lot of cigarettes and drinking a lot of whiskey. No, I'm really sick.
Yeah.
I've got my voice is going out, so
you're playing hurt.
I apologize already.
You got those baby germs flowing through you.
Yeah. It was my turn, so
yep.
I've got my extra.
Your wife's been fighting it, your baby girl has been fighting it, and now mm-hmm. It's your turn to carry that cross.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you being here, playing hurt. Joining us, as always, our silent partner, Nate, who is making the sound happen very diligently. He's got his hands full tonight because our guest this evening is Brian Oberlin. Brian is an internationally renowned mandolin player. He is, throughout his career, has been many times over a collaborator. He's a solo songwriter and recorder, as well as performer. He is the founder of River of the West Mandolin Camp. He's also the director there. So a man of many parts, many of them involving the mandolin. Brian, welcome to Hot Garbage.
Awesome to be here, you guys.
It's awesome to have you. Just so the listeners know, you had recorded some songs that we're going to hear throughout the episode. Sounded amazing. Really excited to have you on. And I don't really know anything about the mandolin. So my first question is, how did you get involved playing this? And what was your entree into this world of mandolin playing?
Well, I first heard of a mandolin from a friend, a sibling of a friend, and I just heard some bluegrass music, and I heard this little twinkling going on. You know, what the heck is that instrument? And found out it was a mandolin. Even read the word mandolin on the liner notes of a Diamond Rio album. Right? You want to talk like 90s cheese country. And I thought it was a misprint, right? And I was like, you know, what the hell is mandolin? But I had already been playing guitar, and I picked up the mandolin and loved it right away. In fact, I got into bluegrass and bought all the bluegrass instruments, learned to play them, and the mandolin prevailed.
Nice.
Were you into bluegrass first, and then you pursued the instruments, or did you discover the mandolin, and that was kind of your doorway into bluegrass?
About the same time. Yeah.
Some simultaneous impact right there.
Yeah.
So you were a country music fan prior to this? Is that what you kind of like your background was as a listener and a guitar player?
No. I mean, I've always loved all types of music. I mean, yeah, in the 90s, when I was in high school, I certainly liked country music, but I liked everything. You know, I played drums in a trio band with my buddies, and we thought we were Primus. So, you know, I mean, everything. I've always had all kinds of music. So now I'm just learning how to play them.
So is learning an instrument kind of intuitive to you? Is that something that you've always taken to pretty easily, or it's just a passion of yours, and so you're willing to put in the work?
Yeah, I've been able to pick up stringed instruments pretty intuitively, most of them. The ones that have frets, that is.
Yeah.
You know, violins and stuff like that are not my thing. I can't handle the bow, but yeah, I mean, I can make noise on just about anything that has frets on it. You know, is it great noise? I don't know. But yeah, a lot of it is attributed to my brother, I think. My brother played guitar, and I was younger, and I would just sit next to him and watch him and sort of hum along, and he would, like, strum a big, long chord, and I would, like, and I would hum the notes of the chord. So I was like ear training myself, like at a really young age. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, it's I think if it's in your ears, then it's a lot easier to get out.
What was your brother playing? What kind of music was he like listening to? We talked to so many musicians that got their first taste of what they ended up loving from their older brother.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious what your brother was playing on the guitar back when you were teaching yourself by ear.
I don't exactly remember. I mean, I know that he was probably playing some dead milkman.
Sure.
And stuff like that, you know, because he, you know, he's like late 80s and The Clash. And but he was also just playing like his own kind of music, too, which was just folky, you know, just kind of hippie folky stuff.
Mm-hmm. How old were you when you picked up the mandolin?
19.
19. Yeah. All right. So you're old enough to know what you're doing by then, you know.
Yeah.
You got some ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I was young and dumb, but I was rolling with it. Yeah.
Well, what were some of your influences? Because I think a lot of our listeners are not going to have a lot of context for mandolin playing. But when you were 19 years old, what were you drawing from for inspiration? What were some of the bands that you were listening to, or what were some of the mandolin players that you learned from?
Well, right around the same time that I was introduced to bluegrass, I was also, you know, I had been a fan of the Grateful Dead. I went to a couple of Dead shows, and of course, if you're a fan of the Dead, you eventually come across Grisman, because Garcia and Grisman did a bunch of stuff. So Grisman was probably the first person that I was inspired by. Then a few years, that's David Grisman, a few years down the road, I discovered like some really fine mandolin playing, like Sam Bush and my favorites, Jethro Burns and Tiny Moore, who are long gone now, but they're the best. Tiny Moore played with Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys. Mm-hmm. And
Texas swing style bluegrass. It's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, like Western swing. Mm-hmm. And Jethro Burns was like, you know, jazz mandolin from Chicago. He was the best. So those guys heavily influenced me. I mean, anybody who's good at their instrument can influence me, but those guys have heavy influence.
Those are the big ones.
Yeah.
Well, you, Brian, you and Andy are both from the Grand Rapids, Michigan area, and both of you guys...
Both from Rockford, actually.
Both from Rockford.
Like real narrow it down. Like real small.
So it's possible you drove by Andy's, the animal graveyard that was Andy's home at some point when you were growing up. But you're both, you know, both bluegrass fans and both kind of came to this kind of music and have a pretty good depth of knowledge there. Was that a big part of growing up in Michigan? Was there a scene there? Was there a lot of bluegrass being played when you guys were growing up?
It was available. There was a big festival every year up in northern lower Michigan called Bliss Fest that my parents would take me to. Or
Wheatland.
Wheatland. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wheatland and Bliss were the two big bluegrass festivals. And national acts would come through for that stuff. And, you know, there was always people playing acoustic instrumental music. But I really didn't discover the bluegrass scene until... probably until I came across your band, Grasshopper. But my parents would play me Bill Monroe and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing live bluegrass music, Brian was in a band in Grand Rapids called Grasshopper that played at this place called The Radio. And, I got in there well before I was okay to be in there. So that was pretty cool.
Did they serve you?
No, they wouldn't serve me, but they would let me in. So I had like an agreement. So I would just take drinks off of other people's beers. And, yeah, saw some pretty cool stuff in there. Saw Green Sky Bluegrass there for the first time ever.
Yeah.
When they filled in for you guys one night, that was pretty amazing. And I've seen them a ton of times since.
Mm-hmm.
And, so it sounds like there was a foundation for this kind of stuff where you guys grew up. I think
people there were hungry for any kind of live music. And if it was well done, you would have people start showing up just because it was something to do. And then if it was good, it was even more, you know, oh, hooray. Here we go. And Grasshopper was one of those things where it was just like, this is fucking fantastic. I just wanted to devour more bluegrass music.
There was a bit of a scene. Of course, bluegrass is always kind of underground a little bit, like the local bluegrass level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where, that's how I cut my teeth in bluegrass. Like, there was a festival near Newaygo. I don't know if you ever even heard of this. It was Bob Ely's campground. And I, you know, they had like a couple festivals a year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was some good grass going on there, too. A lot of great things going. But
well, my impression of bluegrass is kind of what you're talking about, where there's something local, there's some opportunity for musicians to gather together and play this music for one another. It's very much, for me, a live experience. It's a kind of a collective experience. At least that's the impression that I get of that kind of scene. So how was it that you decided that you could make a living at this and you know, make this a career?
When people started clapping for me.
That was enough, huh?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, I figured I could make a career of it with Grasshopper. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that I mean, of course, I really loved playing music in before Grasshopper, but then I had this job, and I would constantly be showing up late and like sleeping at the job, and finally my boss fired me, you know. And, you know, I got that Midwest mentality, too. You know, it's like, you got to have a job. You
right.
know? So, yeah, I just got fired and I haven't turned back, man. I also teach a lot. So,
yeah,
I found a great passion in teaching. So mixing gigs with teaching.
Excellent.
Yeah, I make my 10 grand a year.
You clear that bar. I mean,
oh yeah, yeah.
That's what it takes.
So now teaching bluegrass, and I've always just kind of noticed with the bluegrass jam circles that you kind of come across at festivals, it feels like you need to know a few like numbers. Like there's a few like standards that everybody plays. Is there any ones that people coming up in bluegrass who are learning stuff should start out with? I mean, everybody plays Wagon Wheel. You always hear that.
I'm not a fan of Wagon Wheel.
I feel like it's dead.
Well, it's like...
It's played out.
It's way played
it's
out.
It's too folky,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm just not a big fan. I'll just lay that out there. Sorry, people.
I'm more folk than I am bluegrass.
I can't stand
so
that song.
Offended.
But... but... Yeah, yeah, there are some songs. Like, you just got to look into, like, Flat and Scruggs. Like, get yourself a Flat and Scruggs album, or really, I think what's best is like
Neon Moon by Brooks and Dunn.
You need to get Aeroplane by John Hartford.
Yeah.
Learn that album.
Although that's a lot of original stuff. It hasn't really reached into the circle. You know what? Mm-hmm. So I'm a total dork, you guys. You know what I did is I wanted to learn this music. Like, and I was so passionate about it. I acquired as many CDs as I could find. Like, I went to the library. I spent a bunch of money. I went to Elderly Instruments in Lansing and just bought, like, tons.
Is the mandolin considered an elderly instrument?
Yeah.
That sounds like a dig.
Yeah. No, Elderly Instruments, it's... I don't know why they call it that, because they have old ones there, yeah. I guess.
Picturing just a catchy clavichords name. And, you know, pipe organs and mm-hmm. liras or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Basset horns.
I interrupted to insult you, so please continue your story.
I'm good, man. I'm sorry I said the Wagon Wheel comment, man.
Oh, no. I do not give a shit about any of these. I mean, in terms of, I have no strong opinion to be trampled on. So by all means.
Wagon Wheel had its time, though. Holy shit. My wife loved Wagon Wheel. She would be like, let's listen to that song 7 times in a row mm-hmm. right now. It's the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. And then the end of the summer, it was just like, fuck, I hope no one ever plays that again.
Wagon Wheel took bluegrass to a new place, and I wish it would leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
What's the place it took it to?
It was mainstream. That was a big song. Like, all of a sudden people were like, oh, I love bluegrass, but they knew that one old Crow Medicine Show song, you know?
See, it's not bluegrass, though. And you talk to mm-hmm. any real bluegrasses out there will agree with me. That song is not bluegrass.
Those bluegrass holes.
Yeah. What I call the white hats. White hats. The
what does that mean?
The purists. They don't.
The good guys.
Yeah. No, yeah. They're not necessarily good guys. They just wear cowboy hats and they're never like, dirty.
Like Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys.
Yeah.
They all wore suits, white polo hats. Ties, white hats.
See, from my perspective and knowing as little as I do, you guys could both be making up everything that you're saying. This all just sounds.
We totally are.
There could. I mean, to me, bluegrass sounds like a string of made up words around a central theme. That's how I would interpret.
Old school bluegrass.
Wagon Wheel is a song they start every Telluride Bluegrass Festival with.
I do know Wagon Wheel. I am familiar with that song.
But man, so like the bluegrass, like traditionalists, like the Godfathers, these dudes are serious as fuck. They play this music like this, exactly like this, with no deviations, really fast, like fucking perfect. They're just amazing musicians, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they don't fucking jam. They play the song the way it was written, and then they play, they do their part, you know? It's,
yeah.
And they're very serious, and they're very well dressed, and it's fucking amazing. It's
they're
a very.
Sweating their asses off.
It's a totally different kind of show.
Outside in 90 yeah. degree weather.
So I wanted to access that. I wanted to know.
Yeah,
this
when
repertoire.
I interrupted you, you were collecting mm-hmm. a bunch of music.
Yeah,
and,
collected
you know.
All this music, and I borrowed my mom's typewriter. I typed all the lyrics to the songs, then listened to the songs, and wrote in the chords for them, like figured out the chords.
You made your own sheet music?
Yeah.
Holy
yeah.
shit.
And That's then. Amazing. And then I gave my mom worked at the library. I gave all these sheets to my mom, and she laminated them for me. And I have this book. There's like almost 200 songs in there. So
and you still have this? That you?
Oh, I still have the book.
You're
yeah.
annotated.
Oh my god! I would love it if you released that as a thing, like Brian Oberlin's favorite bluegrass hits.
Well,
it's like all the transcribed music that you did.
I've looked at it.
It's like a cover song, you know? Like I don't know. That's fucking amazing that you went through all that trouble to do that.
There are some. Yeah, there are some wrong things in there, but whatever.
If you were in the Beatles, someone would definitely have published that by now.
Oh, yeah. yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just letting you know.
But it was my school, man. I just needed to...
Yeah, I imagine that would be like a crazy... I don't know. Like, I think... yeah, you just have to immerse yourself in it to become an expert at something. And that's where I fail so often is I just don't like dive into anything head first. But
right.
It's not that nerdy. It's just like what you're into.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the people that are the most into these things are the ones who, like yourself, become an expert at them. So I think that's pretty awesome. And you still have all this stuff.
Yeah, I still have the book. That's yeah. amazing.
And you've come back and fact-checked yourself, so you know there's a couple of mistakes in there?
Not the whole thing. I've just looked at it a couple of times to, like, you know, there's all these typos. And you know, it's on a typewriter, right?
Yeah, so. That is crazy. That is awesome. It's awesome to have that artifact.
Yeah.
But you were telling us that you had written an EP of about six songs, right? Six songs some mm-hmm. time ago. And you are in the last couple of years, you've written some songs to flush that out. And in April, you're heading into the studio to record a full length. And you'd played some songs that are going to be recorded in April for us today. Can you set up this first one?
I'm sorry, what?
Can you set up this first one? I'd love to play some of the live stuff here at this point.
And yeah.
You played a couple of tracks for us.
Yeah, so I'm super excited about it. Yeah, the EP was I had some success with the EP and sold it out, so I'm just going to turn the EP into a full length and super excited and got some new tunes. So the first one, this tune is called If I Can't Have You, and it's one that I wrote while living in Grand Haven, Michigan, and there was a train literally that went through my backyard like 20 feet from my back door. No, that's a lie.
It was okay. A ghost train.
It went through his house.
A spectral locomotive.
Yeah, okay, 40 feet. But it was, I mean, it would shake the house. And mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was just a great little house. So I wrote this when I was there.
Thank you. When the springtime flowers are blooming and the blue jay calls out for his new mate, for you I'll be dreaming of holding a pretty girl. Please don't make me wait. Oh, my broken heart. Oh, my broken heart. I can't start my life anew if I can't, if I can't have you. If I can't.
I was reading a little bit about some 19th century dentistry.
Oh, good.
So it turns out when dentistry was in its infancy, there weren't dentists.
It was more art than science.
It was like ivory tuners and
guys like Doc
Holliday, jewelry makers and shit.
Alcoholic murderers.
A guy with a steady hand. And to make dentures back then, people preferred actual human teeth.
Who doesn't?
It became common for people to go out into like the battlefield after a battle and pull out teeth out of like dead people's heads.
Oh, jeez.
Classy.
They've come to be called Waterloo teeth right now. Like they're being like found in like, if you find like these old dentures that have human teeth, there's a good chance that those teeth were people at the Battle of Waterloo.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And they would just, and then it got really bad. People started raiding graves and stuff. And they would.
Weren't everyone's teeth just universally terrible back then?
Well, I mean,
wasn't
it
just a bad
ones.
Time for teeth? And if you were a soldier who had died in a battle, I can't imagine your teeth would be better than nothing.
I think that these new ones, they were just like, you would get a handful of teeth and have to sort them out and try and make like a matching set. And then you'd sell that matching set to the local horseshoe fitter. And you would put them in somebody's mouth. And people weren't really like, I don't think people were aware. The article I read made it seem like people weren't really aware that these were corpse teeth. They were just like, we prefer human teeth. They're just better. It's easier to eat with than your weirdly chiseled ivory.
It does what it's designed to do.
Your ivory is just like, it's basically like one big tooth with ridges on it. That would suck.
You know what disappoints me about dentistry is I have brushed my teeth religiously my entire life. I'm not a disgusting person. I take care of my teeth. I don't always floss, but I sometimes floss, you know? And I think that I'm probably due for some pretty heavy-duty dental shit. I still think that my mouth has betrayed me in spite of that.
Just rip out, like, the back four teeth on both sides and just gouge out the rest and fill them with gold. It'd be good forever.
I want to maintain my pearly whites. I want to keep my own teeth.
Mm-hmm.
I want everything to be good.
If you've made it this far without a cavity and you're just worried about it now.
I think I am due.
You've done pretty good. I've got a shitload of cavities.
Yeah.
I just gave up on brushing my teeth like 5 years ago. Just like, fuck it.
Yeah, and you're no worse for the wear.
No, my mouth always hurts though.
I don't want any mouth pain. That's what I'm saying. I don't want corpse teeth. I don't want...
Yeah,
I don't want to lose my own human living teeth.
I'm really, really hoping I don't get the halitosis where I just like stick up a room with my zombie breath. It could happen.
Brian, have you had cavities before? If you don't mind asking.
Yeah, I have.
I'm pretty sure I do have some. I've never had them before.
Yeah.
So I've got I'm coming to terms with some shit right now.
I think you probably have about 24 cavities. You just haven't been to the dentist in years.
I haven't been to the dentist in years. It's been 2 years since I was at the dentist. I'm ashamed to admit it, but it's true.
I didn't go to the dentist for about 5 years when I didn't have insurance. And when I went in, they had to clean my teeth in two sittings. But my insurance ran out like a week later. So I said, please just do the whole thing. I sat in that chair for 6.5 hours.
6.5 hours for a cleaning?
Well, it was a double cleaning on both sides because it was so bad. And they told me my teeth are fucked. And then they had me come back in and like they were like, well, what do you want to do? You have 8 cavities. You can afford to do like 3. It's like, well, do these ones.
Pick my favorites,
I still have a bunch of fucking... Yeah, it's bad. Don't eat sugar, kids.
Oh, no. I'm terrified. I am terrified hearing that story.
It's bad. Have you had any wisdom teeth pulled?
No. No. I've kept people away from my mouth, primarily.
Wisdom teeth was a fucked up thing. I cracked a wisdom tooth a while back, and they just took out the two on the right, and they did it while I was like wide awake, and they put this like basically it was like a it felt like a cork like a wine opener, and they just started turning this knob, and it cracked the tooth into 1,000 pieces in my mouth.
This sounds like 19th century dentistry to me.
And they pick out all the teeth parts and pull it out, and you just hear the crack. You hear him like, and it just sounds so horrible.
Did it hurt?
No, I didn't feel it at all, but I did feel the pop and the cracking of it. But there was like enough Novocaine or whatever they use.
I would vomit. Up there. I would just vomit my eye, into my dentist's
eye, like,
face.
My eye let loose like one giant tear on that side and just dripped on my face. As he ripped out that wisdom tooth.
And I should tell our listeners, both Brian and Andy, normal looking guys. They don't look as ghoulish as this description, particularly yeah, Andy, no, I is do making brush my them
teeth.
Sound.
I really do brush my teeth, but I do have cavities, and it's annoying as fuck. You're right.
My one tooth is just fine, boys.
Well, Andy, you want to play some songs for us?
Yeah. We were talking about traditional songs earlier, and one that I've always loved is a song called Pallet on Your Floor. I don't even know how old this is. This could have been written in like the 20s. It could be even older than that. I have no idea. It's one of those songs. It just has the listing as traditional or anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
But it's called Pallet on Your Floor. And this is by a band that I've been listening to this week. Just kind of a crazy string band called the Parmesans. And this is their version of it. That was the Parmesans from Oakland. That was a song off of their album Nature's Burrito.
Nature's Burrito. So that's like contemporary bluegrass?
Yeah. That came out a couple of years ago. You can find, that came out last year. There's a new album they have out called Flat Baroque that came out last year, too.
Interesting.
In 2014, actually, not 2015. Okay.
So, Brian, when you're playing kind of within the idiom of bluegrass music, what do you do as a songwriter to create something original? Like, because again, for me, untrained ears, and I don't have a lot of experience with it, but there's a lot of it that sounds very thematically similar. Like Andy was saying, there's a lot of tradition in that kind of music. So what do you do to take creative steps forward when you're writing music?
I mean, definitely staying, like, trying to keep a bluegrass song to sound like bluegrass,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, that includes like keeping the chord progression simple, or you know, within the progress or within the genre.
Mm-hmm.
And the lyric content too, you know, it's not like, you know, a bluegrass tune doesn't often sing about, you know, dancing downtown with your lady friend at a ballroom. You know, so the lyrical content, but yeah, just keeping it creative things going. For me, if I can hear that it sounds bluegrassy, that's like I'm real happy about that, and that keeps it going for me.
Do you ever feel constrained or kind of limited creatively by that?
No. I mean, if that's what I'm going for.
Right.
Yeah, then.
Sure.
But there was a time in my life where I did feel constrained by bluegrass music itself. That's why I started learning swing and jazz. Like, I played mandolin for about 5 years, and I got, you know, any mandolin players out there, and they know the chop chord. You know, it's just this chopping motion, chuck, chuck, chuck thing that you do. And I did get a little tired of that. So that's why I started learning swing and jazz. But, you know, it's always there. It's inherent. It's how I learned to play mandolin. So
absolutely.
Did you guys see that Pizza Hut came out with a line of clothes?
I did not see this.
No kidding.
Pizza Hut's got some clothes.
They're diversifying, huh?
Yeah, they're for hip, trendy youths. And, you know, you can get a scarf that's
only the coolest fat kids wearing pizza.
You can get a nice, like, 5-panel all over print pepperoni. But the best one of all is they have a hoodie that just says pizza is bae.
Is what?
Is bae.
What does that mean?
Bae is like a thing, like, you would say, like, instead of, like, baby to like, a person, like. But girls say it about guys too, like my bae. But there's not like, they don't ever say
Add
my.
A loop there.
It's always like out to dinner with bae.
I don't think that.
And that means like a girl and her boyfriend or vice versa.
Oh, so wait. So it's bae is gender neutral.
Is gender neutral.
It can be used in either sort.
It is gender neutral. It's mostly feminine, but it's also used in
what
the
other kind term. Of person. Is saying this?
Yeah, is that like
am
generation
I saying this?
X? Yeah, I mean, where is this coming from? What demographic?
It's like modern millennials. This is, well, I guess, this is a term. That's a horrible term to use, but it's like, I don't know.
Instead of ancient millennials,
like it's kids who are in high school,
like the Egyptians.
Kids who are in like high school now probably were saying that a year ago, and now that's not cool anymore. So Pizza Hut's doing it.
I think I saw an advertisement on my my phone solitaire app that used the word bae, and I had no idea what it was referring to. That's a very damning sentence for me to say that I was playing solitaire.
Do you think that originally started from that horrible rock song, Hey Bebe, back in the day?
Oh, the No Doubt song?
No, I think it was like Hurricane Chris.
Oh.
It might have been Hurricane Chris or like Little Flip or something. The song was called Hey Bebe. Hey Bebe. Hey Bebe.
And we were just treated to a little bit of Brian's phone music.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No problem. That just proves how authentic this show is. That this is really happening.
Yeah. It's real time.
It is.
I'm pretty happy to know that the word dude is still in circulation. My son's 13-year-old is a 13-year-old, and he says dude. Maybe it's because I do. But
yeah, I say that.
But I asked him, you know, he says to his friends, dude. So
yeah, I would say dude is endured. I feel like it's really... I mean,
dude, man.
Dudette did not make the cut.
No. Dudette never really had the job. It's like Miss Pac-Man.
Or Duder. Those didn't make it.
Duder.
I didn't know that was ever in contention, really, but it could have.
Bro. Bro didn't have much of an authentic shelf life. It was mostly a...
Bra's good.
Bra. Those are sort of ironic tags now.
And bro has become more of an insulting
Dude can
label.
Be sincere. Yeah, bro's got a negative connotation.
Yeah.
I think a dude is also kind of like a basic bitch.
But what
about
a dude bro?
A dude is just kind of like a basic dude. It's useful.
Yeah.
Speaking of useful, Brian, you being here to play some live music was very useful. You played a couple other tunes. What was another one that you shared with us, one of those live cuts? We'd love to hear another one right now.
This one is one that I wrote... with my son in mind. It's called Hometown Melody, and it's about being back there in Michigan, seeing fireflies. So,
oh, miss fireflies.
I've seen the lights over foggy German towns, screeching Deutschbahn trains carrying folks from all around. And I felt the waves of the warm Ligurian sea, dancing the piazza while cobblestone under feet. Castles fill my gaze for a whole life long, and I've heard their bells chime an old time song. But you are the likes of a wonder I've not seen, a shining light among fireflies, my hometown melody.
The Swifts out at the school in Northwest every summer. Is it Swifts? That's what I'm thinking of. You know those birds. There's an old school out there, and there's like an old chimney. And for a month every year, they nest in this chimney. And apparently they go out in these huge flocks all day. Then around half an hour before they're going to roost for the night, they all kind of start collecting in this big cloud. And it's really just thousands and thousands of Swifts at the same time. And they kind of move like tuna do in those in the ocean, just as one kind of mega group.
And as it starts to get dark, they start to dive into the chimney one by one, and there's a hungry hawk or two flying around and just picking them off.
Oh yeah, you'll see and a bunch of hawks screaming, dive bombing, and then you know, like it's like they have some signal that they know internally that tells them all at the same time to shoot down this chimney. So it's this spectacle, and people will go out there with picnic baskets all the month of September, and it's really cool. But if you replace that with bats, everyone would find it repulsive and disgusting. But there is nothing more disgusting than a big flock of birds. Yeah. The most germy, virus-ridden, shitting cloud of animals that you can possibly imagine. And everyone's out there with baskets and fruit. They're
probably shitting on each other.
Ooing and aahing. Oh, yeah. You know, I've been there with my friend Brandon several times, and he is kind of a shit magnet. Also the biggest bird hater that I know. So I don't know if those two things are mutually exclusive, but he does take a lot of bird turds in that setting. I've never been shit on by a bird.
He's asking for because he hates birds so much.
Have either of you been shit on by a bird before?
I've never been shat on by a bird.
That's good.
Or wait.
It's supposed to be good luck.
Have I been?
I definitely have been. Nothing memorable or anything. It's just always just like, oh, what the fuck is on my back? Oh, that's bird shit.
Yeah, I think a little bit. Like
Like a, I remember hearing it actually.
A splash?
Yeah, I remember hearing it and just maybe part of it hit my jacket.
What do you mean? You heard like it whizzed by?
No, I heard it hit the ground. It was just like plop. And I was like, what in the hell is that?
And I once, I lived on a lake. The neighborhood that I grew up in was on a lake. And we had lots of like blue heron around. And they're a majestic, beautiful bird, a great blue heron. I saw one by the waterfront. It had just eaten a fish, and it took off in flight. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great. And it spread its wings out, and then it immediately vomited and shit at the exact same time. It, just like a bucket of chum that it just dumped out of its asshole right in front of me while also vomiting the fish. It was the least, like, all of the mystery and the magic of that bird was
it was like, oh,
crapped
that was a bad
and
fish.
Puked out of me.
I have to get all of this out of me immediately.
The most beautiful bird,
yeah,
in all the land.
You know when you see a blue heron, oftentimes it's at dusk, and you know they're kind of a lone sentinel, plodding through this kind of primordial area, and it's kind of beautiful. But no, that ruined it. It was spoiled it forever.
That's awful.
Nature always ruins itself for you.
We were barbecuing here this summer, and these crows were just surrounding us, trying to eat it, waiting for us to get up to eat all of our shit, and. My sister-in-law, Christy, noticed something hit her shoulder, and she looked down at the ground, and a crow had dropped, like, a grizzled bone, flesh still on it from some dead animal that it had just found, and it just had bounced off of her elbow.
And if it's a crow, it was on purpose. Those are smart birds.
Oh, it was still up there.
That was a message.
Mean-eyeing us. Yeah, like, get out of here, this will be you.
I was driving 2 days ago in Northwest. I was crossing the Broadway Bridge, and just as you approach the bridge from the Pearl District, there's a couple of like light posts that have overhangs over the street, and I had never ever seen a bird over there, but that day there were hundreds of pigeons just perched on those all at the same time, and it was very unnerving because I had never seen it before. It's not a pigeon spot, and there were a ton of white pigeons too. It was really, again, really disgusting. Nothing turns my stomach more than a grouping of birds. A murder of birds.
So I was getting some cat litter today, and it was light clumping. What a weird combination of words.
It's designed to light clumps.
You know,
or as if your cat just shits smaller.
And these clumps are so light. When you scoop them out, it's amazing. It says on the bottle, like, pick me up, and it is quite light for the amount of cat litter in here. Do you think that'll make it work better or worse?
If it's light clumping?
Yeah. I kind of want a heavy clump.
I feel as if the clump cannot be determined by the litter. I think it has to be determined by the shit.
Well, it also clumps.
I think a big old turd is going to be a heavy clumper.
Clumps. Turds don't clump. It's the piss.
Oh, the piss. Sure. Okay.
That is of large volume.
Clods of piss. A lot.
And those are some pretty heavy clumps. And I feel like that's soaking up all the gross. But I don't know. No,
light clumping.
Cat litter is the only thing that is heavy and like is any kind of clumping.
I think if you shit your pants, if you somehow shit your pants where it's not diarrhea, where it's like a full turd size, that's a heavy clump. A light clumping is a little turdlet, you know.
I guess you could use it to describe like mashed potatoes.
Do people really shit their pants if it's not diarrhea though?
Nobody fully shits their pants. It's mostly shirts.
If you ever shat on the beach, you can. There's some clumpage there.
Oh yeah,
good call. There it is.
Yeah,
that's nature's litter box.
That's nature's heavy clumper.
Brian, have you shit on the beach before? Is that what you're confessing? Are you like that heron I saw? Craps where he fishes.
Yeah, I just let a whole pail of.
An upside down bucket.
An upside down bucket of krill.
That is repulsive.
I think I have shat on the beach.
Well, you grew up in Michigan. There's lakes around there. Did you guys ever shit in water?
Fuck yes. Unfortunately.
Brian, did you shit in water?
Like
intentionally.
It's pretty gross.
Yes. Yeah, it's
I
not
tried
cool.
to. I couldn't squeeze one out.
It's
My
not cool at all, but
me.
You're in Michigan. You're on a lake, and there's nowhere to go. As a young kid, I was often kicked off the boat to go shit. Swim as far as you can, take your shit, and then swim back so it doesn't come back by us. And almost always,
it's worse than having sex in water.
Yeah, it's not good.
All right, I can get behind that. It's like
but I've also been in Lake Michigan more times than I can remember, where a turd just floats up. and you're like, oh fuck, who shit in Lake Michigan?
Like the the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah. just bobs, like, man, up there. I'm not gonna shit in this lake anymore, because that's fucked up when that happens. And I'm probably doing that to other people all the time.
Yeah, and I could never squeeze one out in water. I used to hang out beneath this dock. There was like a gap in this dock, and I kind of let myself under there and would hang, hoping that I could do it, but I could never push one out.
Well, you know, there's a lot of pressure. I mean, That's why ladies, you know, if they're on their period, they don't bleed in water. There's a lot of pressure there.
Well, that's an interesting mm-hmm. science fact. I didn't really mm-hmm. think about that.
Yeah.
But Andy was able to do it.
I was able to. I was determined. There was no way I wasn't going to shit.
Right.
It might have. It could have just gone through my suit and just faked it and then jumped in.
It was an emergency.
You know, I did what I had to do. Yeah. It was fine.
Yeah, you're often shitting when it's unbidden.
I was probably 9 years old, too, so.
Yeah, it was probably around that time when I was giving it a shot. Maybe I just didn't have a tough enough sphincter to overcome that water pressure. I didn't want it badly enough.
Mm-hmm. You gotta want it.
Yep. This episode is really confronting me with my lack of passions. I have, you know.
True. Will you just give a shit for 5 minutes about shitting in Lake Michigan? We've I'll all try. Done it.
The next time I'm in Lake Michigan, I'm doing it. I'm pooping in that lake.
Now it's not cool anymore. There's people who are like, hey, no, this dude's fucking shitting in Lake Michigan.
Now it's you just about the closing threshold. The loop, you know? Now it's just about finishing something.
Now you're too old to do it in a group of people. You've got to do it by yourself
mm-hmm.
on a secluded beach. You've got to plan it out.
Well, Andy, we better listen to some music that you've got to share with us tonight, because take us out of that poop topic.
Okay.
Not that anyone's surprised we talked about poop on this show.
Well, I'm going to play a song by a band that I really like that I haven't been listening to for a while, and I kind of came across again in my... It just Spanish came up in Shuffle, and I was like, oh, fuck, The Builders and the Butchers.
Oh, yeah.
A Portland band that I really like. They kind of play like what I would consider to be like a funeral dirge, kind of Americana-style music, where it's just... All the songs are pretty dark in like subject matter, but they're great sing-alongs, and there's a lot of cool mandolin and guitar parts and stuff. So
yeah, love Builders and Butchers. What's this song you're going to play?
This is a song called Golden and Green.
Close your eyes and you draw one more day to a close. You choose to be alone. You float through your life as a ghost. And everything heals given time. And everything dies given time. And the scars run together, they're mixing the nerves with the blood. And the soldiers light houses on fire and they burn down. And all your belongings turn to dirt in the when your heart's deep and dark as a well, and everything that's golden and green goes to hell. I goes to hell. They said, bring out your Vivian girls, bring out your cloud-colored girls, and bring me a cup of your tears, and give me the rest of your years.
Brian, one of the things that we've asked a couple of our guests is if they've ever gotten into a fight before. Have you ever gotten into a fight, a physical fight?
Yeah, I have.
All right.
With a bandmate.
Really? A physical fight with a bandmate? That's even better.
Yeah. In a closed-in practice space?
Yeah. He's my great friend, Mark Pettis. He's dead now. He died a few years ago. Oh. But we would, we would get drunk and play games and, like, you know, wrestle around. And we got real pissed at each other one night and got in, like, a full-on fight. And I remember holding his head. Like, he pulled a knife on me and shit.
Jeez.
And there were other people there and held him back. But we rolled around. And I remember holding his head on the concrete saying, man, I could really do this, but I didn't.
Did you get cut with that knife?
No.
Have you ever been stabbed before?
No.
All right, good. That's what I like to know.
We had a long talk about this last podcast.
Ooh, yeah.
no stab.
I don't think I want to be around people that have been stabbed before. I know it's not their fault. They're usually the victims, but I think that they're too close to knife violence for my taste.
Uh-huh.
But you had one pulled on you. That's scary.
Yeah, but it was weird. I mean,
he probably wasn't going to stab you.
He wasn't going to stab me, and he's a friend. I mean, he was like my best friend, and he was just super pissed off and drunk.
Was there something that set him off? Was there something specific that you did to push him to that point?
I don't even remember.
That knife is nothing. It might don't mean
you won't stab with shit with that knife.
I think he was pissed off because we had played a gig that night and he was like really drunk and obnoxious. So I turned down his channel so the audience couldn't hear his banjo. And that really pissed him off.
So. Was this in front of people? Was this after during a show?
Yeah, it was after the show in the parking lot.
That is awesome.
It was real classy of
us. That's a bluegrass move right there.
Yeah, like. That's a bluegrass band.
Come see us play, because afterward this band is going to fight each other in the parking lot. You'll move some tickets when you promise that. Yeah, I would even go check out some
first
bluegrass.
First the show, then the fight. Yeah.
Then these two assholes are going to fight each other. Yeah, one of them might stab the other one.
Yeah, be there.
Yes, very authentic. Very authentic.
Oh, yeah.
Where was this?
That was in northern Michigan. That was like...
That's fighting country, too.
Oh, yeah. Like...
Cadillac.
Like somewhere around Morley or something.
Oh, nice.
Just like north of Grand Rapids.
Right up there by the Burley Swap Meet.
Yeah.
Michigan, so, you know, I grew up in Indiana, and I always... thought that Michigan and Indiana were fairly similar, but the more people I meet from Michigan and the further north you go, I think it's vastly different. I think there's
really?
A pretty big gap. I think there's a lot more of a wilderness mentality in Michigan than there is in Indiana. Indiana's a flat, nothing place full of basically mild and pleasant people. I think Michigan's got a little boil to its blood. because of that wilderness up there.
There's some scary people. I met some scary people in Alaska that were from Michigan.
They
had too many neighbors in Michigan, and they needed to get
running away from the
Alaska,
law.
Alaska, you can write off. It's a lawless place full of big weirdos, I think I would mm-hmm. imagine. Never been to Alaska, but I can't imagine anyone who would choose to live there not being a little bit strange. Yeah. And if they go from Michigan to Alaska, I think that's very telling.
Well,
scary. I miss some scary people.
The Builders and the Butchers are from Alaska, and they moved to Portland.
There you go.
We get a lot of
bands. Yeah, they came to Portland.
We get a lot of good bands.
That tells me a lot about
them,
too.
From Alaska who moved to Portland.
What is another example?
Oh, I'm drawing a blank right now, but I was just listening to somebody the other day. It was another one. I feel like Portugal the Man.
Are they from Alaska?
Moved from Alaska. Mm-hmm. Do you hear?
Interesting.
I could be wrong on that. They might be Canada. Fuck. Saucy Yoda.
I'm much more inclined to trust a band that comes from, or a person that comes from Alaska to civilization.
The one that comes to mind the most is the Builders, the Butchers. So, yeah.
Brian, what are some of your favorite Portland bluegrass? Is there people that you're really digging on that are local here that people can check out?
You know, I don't get out a lot and listen to live music. Usually if there's a good band that comes through town, I'll be working myself. But Scott Law is great, of course. Mm-hmm. Anytime you can catch Scott Law. But no, I mean, sadly, I don't even know about any Portland bluegrass bands.
All right.
It's pretty lame, isn't it?
No, I mean, you and I are kindred spirits in that. I am in the dark to that world a little bit, but Andy's probably got his fingers on the pulse. Maybe he can tell us what's good.
Yeah, some good bluegrass bands around town. Definitely Student Loan we've had on the show. And
of course. 100th
episode,
yeah.
They're fantastic.
You know, I sometimes forget of them as bluegrass.
Another good band, Sugarcane String Band. I feel like they're from Portland. Who else is from Portland? Fruition. I really like Fruition quite a bit. Brad Parsons, who is affiliated with Fruition, is kind of doing his own thing right now, and it's good. It's more rock and kind of like Americana. It's good. Let's see. The Crow and the Canyon are a really good band. They're kind of a super group of other bands.
So it's a pretty robust scene out here. There's a
Allie Crawl lives here.
Oh, right.
And she's an amazing fiddle player from the band Cornmeal, who's also in Yonder Mountain full-time now. And when she's not on tour, she teaches fiddle in Portland to little girls. It's amazing.
Fantastic.
And, yeah.
Well, Brian,
Danny Barnes is from Portland. I'm sorry.
Local musicians and stuff like that. Do you get conscripted in? Do you get a lot of, like, session work? Do people tab you as a, you know, kind of if they need a mandolin for a country song or something like that? Do you get a lot of that kind of work where you get to collaborate with other people and jump on their project?
Yeah, I get a fair amount of session work. Nothing that has really come through in terms of, like, touring. But, yeah, I get some session work here and there. Yeah, it's really cool, too. Love it.
Do you enjoy that? Do you get a chance to kind of stretch different muscles and when you're working with other people? Or
yeah. Yeah, it is, because it's usually in that part of the music business, it's really fun because you're like kind of on the clock. You know, you're like the hired gun. You know, it's not just like, hey, what's up, guys? You know, let's just jam. You know, no, it's like... You come in and you're
there's
like
some work to be done.
You're working, yeah. And
you
I like
unpack
that
your instrument like a assault rifle.
Yeah.
So when you're in those cases, is it mostly
way too far?
What did you say? I missed it. Something about
I was trying
the assault
to make
rifle.
A reference about like a, being like a professional hitman, like coming into the studio and doing your thing. But I said, and then you open up your guitar case and there's an assault rifle inside.
Assault and I like
are,
that.
They're not
I
funny
like that
right
work.
Now. No, there's
time
way,
to get the work.
There's way
session
too many people
work.
Shooting each other with assault rifles. They're not funny
you take,
anymore.
You take work where you can get it.
Yeah.
So is it often where someone they'll hire you and they're going to give you some sheet music and you just come in and you play what you play? Is there ever an opportunity to improvise in those scenarios where you get to kind of influence someone else's music a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, a little both, or is it one versus the other more often?
Usually it's just a chart. Like a, not really sheet music, but just like a chord chart.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they'll say, you know, you know, just play chords and maybe take a solo here. But I have done some sessions, especially with like a really good engineer and producer, where, I'll play something and the engineer will be like, oh, hold on, I like that. And then they'll completely change some things that they've been doing to fit it.
That's cool.
Like a little riff.
That's pretty gratifying.
Yeah, it's super cool. I worked with a really great engineer up in Vancouver. I did that. So
now for your the album that you're going to be working on finishing in April, mm-hmm. is it just you and the mandolin, or is there a little bit more arrangement to it and some other instruments you're going to include?
Well, these days, mostly what I'm doing is solo. So, yeah, it'll be just mandolin and my vocals, which is my act these days. You don't have to argue with the bass player.
That's right. No stabbings can result from that unless it's self-inflicted wounds.
Right, yeah, unless I stab myself. There is one song that is with a band. It's with a pedal steel player.
Oh,
and
I love that.
I'm playing guitar and mandolin. There's a bass and drums, and that's another big reason for this album, just so I could release that. It's 3 gigs of memories. So
yeah,
the name of that tune. So
nice.
Yeah.
Do you like the stripped down where it's just you and the mandolin and an opportunity to make that kind of music, or do you see yourself building it out and adding more ornamentation to it as you go along?
I love playing solo.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets a little lonely. And I'm starting to look, to play with a band again. But I've done solo work here for 5 or 6 years, and I absolutely love it. It's the biggest challenge I can ever come up with in music, because you got to hold it down, man. There's no
you
place.
You have to be an actual musician, basically.
Yeah, there's no place to hide. So
in my band, I'm the bass player, and I can be hid very easily. I can disappear into the background, but not with you. Not when it's all solo.
Yeah, there's nowhere to go, man. You gotta keep it chugging along. I mean, it's cool. I like it. It fits well for concerts and stuff. But I'm not much of a bar band,
right?
or a festival thing. I do play some festivals, but it's got to be kind of short,
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be kind of one of the benefits of being a bluegrass musician is there's a lot of festivals all over the country.
Yeah.
If you timed it right.
Tons of festivals.
Even just as a fan, you can see a lot of bluegrass right now.
Mm-hmm.
All summer long.
Fantastic. Well, you had played with us one of your brand new ones. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that number while we listen to it?
Yeah. So I'm a huge fan of John Hartford. John Hartford was one of the best. He played banjo and fiddle. He played lots of different things, but mostly banjo and fiddle. And he did a lot of really interesting things in the studio. Like he had his own label, and he would be recording a song and just kind of stop and maybe smoke some weed or something, or a phone call would come in. Oh, hey, I'm recording an album right now. Can I call you back later? Just stuff like that. Really creative guy. And he used to write lyrics to fiddle tunes. And I always wanted to do that, so I finally just did it. It's with a fiddle tune called Fiddler's Dream, but I'm calling it Mandoliner's Dream, and I just wrote a bunch of lyrics that mean nothing. I mean, maybe there's like one lyric in there that's true, but all the rest of it's just like...
It's like an early Foo Fighters song.
Yeah, just like, go for it, man.
Yep.
Sing about Herman Melville. Let's do this.
Absolutely. Did not get his due in his time, so the more attention we can pay him now, we owe him that much.
Yeah. If you're looking for any kind of significance to the lyrics here, there's nothing.
So this is called Mandolin's Dream, is that what you said?
Mandoliner's Dream.
Mandoliner's Dream.
Like the Excellent. Fiddler's Dream, but Mandoliner's Dream.
All right, let's check it out.
There's a little old lady that yodeled. If you let her write a letter to the old time Fiddler's Guild, I thought I saw her in Arkansas. Her hands just right for the fiddle she'd build. Well, I can sing melismo quite well, and I wish I could spin the tail of an old white whale like Melville. On Friday night we'll drink from a jug from a still built on the moon. Family recipe, earth shines a remedy for folks who howl at noon. That is something you can never quell. I once knew a horse that would kick the fence just to ring his dinner bell. That's true. Three gigs, maybe hit it big like a songsmith from Oildale Wood. Got an app that tells me luckily good times ain't over for good.
Mandoliner's Dream. Love that one. That's awesome. I love the lyrics too. I love the way that they bounce around. I like the way the words kind of blend. You get connect words really creatively. I love that song. That
cool. Really awesome. Thanks, man.
And thank you so much for being here and sharing some live tracks with us. What is a way that people can follow your music and find out what you're up to musically?
Just do a Google search for my name, Brian Oberlin, on mandolin. That's probably the easiest thing. I could give you the name of my website, but it's...
Isn't it Mandoberlin?
Yeah.
Mandoberlin.com?
Yeah, it's like mandolin underscore Washington County underscore bluegrass / music.
Geosites.
Black, no. Yeah, no, it is Mandoberlin.com. M-A-N-D-O, you know, and then my last name, Oberlin.
And people can go there to get information about where you're playing, when your recordings are coming out, and your teaching. So I know that the camp is going on. I think in June you've got a camp going on this year. So people can find out more information there at your website about that kind of stuff too.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I got some gigs. All my stuff is on there, including my mandolin orchestra stuff.
Oh, awesome.
I direct and lead a 25-piece mandolin orchestra.
Well, that is awesome. People should definitely check that out to find out what you're up to. And let us know, please, when your album is finished. We'd love to let everyone know that it's out there and available for them. So
I will.
When April rolls around, we'd love to hear that. So thanks again, Brian. And thank you guys all for listening to this episode of Hot Garbage. We really appreciate you downloading this episode at iTunes, on Stitcher, and subscribing. We'd also love to hear from you. Please reach out to the show if you can at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's hautegarbagepodcast@gmail.com. Remember, we got a live show coming up January 30th at Killer's Olympian at 9 p.m. It's going to feature a little bit of Andy and Nate and I, and a lot of the student loan, Load B, and comedian Anthony Lopez. So hope to see you there January 30th at Killer's Olympian, the knife shop. Andy, you got a little segment to take us out on this week. Set it up for us.
Yeah. If you listen back to the Meet the Fixes episode, my dad was on the show, and he goes by Johann Sonsabitch. And
is his real name Johann?
Yeah, no, his name's John.
Oh.
But he's Johann to anybody who knows him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a, you know, 6.5 foot tall biker dude. I guess he's 6'3".
He looks like a shredded Rip Van Winkle. Like a giant, like lean, sinewy Rip Van Winkle. That's how I would describe him.
Yeah, he's got a beard. It's long and white. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like if Rip Van Winkle woke up and just well rested as fuck and just ready to go, that's Johann.
So I thought I would just share some of my dad's wisdom that he shared with me over the years. And I think we'll call this segment Johann to Grow On.
Lay it on me.
Fucking with me? You're better off fucking with a lion's ass.
A Johann to grow on. All right, Andy. We're going to play a little music on the way out. A little palate cleanser for that Johann to grow on. But I think it's an important lesson to have learned.
It is.
Don't fuck with your dad.
No. Yeah.
At least not before you fuck with a lion's ass.
All right. This is something I've been meaning to bring up for a long time. This is a record label and promotion thing coming out of Chicago called Young Camelot. Okay. They've been doing shows. They're kind of like the Banana Stand of Chicago.
Young Camelot. That sounds like a pretty awesome hip-hop collective.
Yeah, well, they do hip-hop. They do a lot of old-timey music, too. They do a lot of blues. They do a lot of rock and crazy punk stuff. But the one that really has blown me away just recently is Chicago rapper Show You Suck, all one word. Okay. He's a dude we played on the show about a year ago now. He had an album all about pizza.
All right.
He dropped like 3 more albums about pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a live show he did for Young Camelot.
Sweet.
Back in November.
What's the name of this song?
This song is called All I Need.
For Brian Oberlin, for Andy, for Nate, this is Drew. We'll see you next time on Hot Garbage. Thanks.
Yes.
Who needs apps when you got a t-shirt this fucking cool? Who needs a password to Hulu Plus, girl, when I got you? I need Alf back on the tube. I need a memory card for my PS2. I need cops to stop and frisk and shoot the film. What they do, but pull it all on the news. Lord knows we need to breathe and let it be a heaven here for all these G's, all these A's, all these Z's. Eat with you for the letters in between. Bounce. Bounce. Bounce.
I want you to find you.
Now when this chorus drops,
I need you to find you.
I want everybody in here to jump as high as you fucking can.
I need you to be you.
One,
if anyone else they
one,
they
two,
do, girl,
three,
you can
bounce. You big cope in a bad bra. No kid got a dad bod. Hauling notes on my iPod. Will you see me? Call me Rat God. And I need. Shirt is fucking cool.
Cool.
Who needs a password to Hulu Plus, girl, when I got you?
June.
I need Alf back on the tube. I need a memory card for my PS2. I need cops to stop and frisk and shoot. Film what they do. Put it all on the news. Lord knows we need to breathe. Let it be a heaven here for all those G's. All these A's. All these Z's. Even jumping for the letters in between. I need things to be as they seem. Need a new pair of Nico jeans. Need some loud Hercules with all that I. Hands up.
I want you to find you.
Hands up, hands up.
I need you to find you.
Hands up, hands up.
I need you to find you.
I need you to find you. I need you to be you. I need you to be you.
If anyone else say anything different, girl, you can tell them.
One, two, pimp cope in a bad bra. No kid got a dad bod. All it knows on my iPod. When you see me, call me Rat God. And I need. That's all I need.
That's all I need.
That's all I, that's all I, that's all I need. Big gold bit of
That's all I, that's all I, that's all I need. Last song, two hands up. Last song, two hands up. Everybody in here, last song, two hands up. Thank you. My name is Show You Suck. I'm from Chicago and stuff. And this last song is called Girls and Nachos.